This is an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. To learn more about what we do, visit rtrfm.com.au.
Hi, you mob. We here at the Sovereign Podcast would like to acknowledge the Whadjuk Noongar people, family, children and elders, past and present, on the land on which we meet today, Whadjuk Noongar Boodja.
It's a privilege to be standing on Noongar country, and we should all be proud to call Boorloo and the surrounding waters of the Derwul Yerrigan our home.
This podcast is like our baby, mm-hmm. our sister, hopefully.
Ooh, I feel like I'm falling in love with you every day.
Chill out.
I'm telling you, mob, when I first met IJ, like we talk for hours.
Kaya, and welcome to the Sovereign Podcast.
A show made by sister girls for sister girls, as well as any other mob and beautiful people who may relate.
We come to you from Boorloo as two First Nations women from the outer regions of WA, with so many stories of home and navigating our lives here in the city.
Central to our show is our black lens and perspective, which comes from our lived experience as black girls in today's society. On the Sovereign Podcast, we will talk about topics that stretch from First Nations affairs to beauty and fashion, navigating university, relationships, life in your 20s, and everything else in between.
We hope that through this podcast, you learn, laugh, and feel the love, comfort, and sisterhood we are bringing to you with every episode. So stay tuned.
Hey, you mob!
It's IJ.
And Shah.
And welcome back to the Sovereign Podcast. Yay. On today's episode of Sovereign, we are joined by our fifth official guest, who we are so privileged and excited to have in. Here's a little bio for you guys. Mm-hmm. After an extensive and successful modelling career, this guest has expanded their work to the broader fashion industry with a mission of amplifying First Nations representation. And wow, has she done that. Now CEO of one of Sovereign's favourite brands, Kirakan, our guest is making waves on the home front and internationally, so please welcome Shannon Maguire.
Yay! Insert clapping sound.
Make me feel deadly.
I know, we've got to roll out the carpet, please. How are you, Sharon? Shannon. That's my mother-in-law's name. Shannon.
I get Sharon all the time and I still answer to it, so that's fine.
Oh, I go by IJ because people don't know mine.
Things are good. Things are good. Perth weather. Has been not great, but today the sun's shining for us, so
I know,
good start.
Yesterday was the worst, though.
Oh, yeah, it's yuck.
Yesterday was disgusting.
We end up talking about the weather on here way too much because it's just all the time.
It's all the time.
You don't know any
Perth
day.
Perth people are terrible, though. You know, like, we have such good weather.
Yeah, that's true. Like, compared to, like, East Coast.
90% of the year. Mm. Yeah, and for then real. As soon as it gets, like, a little
We're
bit cold looking. Or a little bit,
we complain.
We complain about it.
Anyway, Shannon, just out of curiosity, who's your mob and where are you from?
So I am Whadjuk, Yuwut and Ballardong. I cover most of the Perth metro area, the Wheat Belt, and up to Yuwut country there, up past Yantcha. So it's like I've grown up in Perth most of my life. I was in the hills mostly, which I love. I love the Perth hills.
They're pretty nice.
Went to school in Gidgeganup. That was it was an amazing way to grow up.
I have no point of reference as to where that is.
So do you know 2J?
Like all the way up north, just going straight.
So you know those big bumpy things that you see outside of the city? They're the hills.
Yeah. that way.
Yeah, out that way. out east. So I don't know if you know 2J Road.
That's ringing a bell. Okay, so that way.
You've definitely been there. You know, you've definitely been there.
Sort of towards northern-ish.
Got you,
like before
okay.
then, but not that far. So my house was in Morangup, but I went to school in Gidgeganup. Mm-hmm. And Gidge means like spear, like in Whadjuk. So there's lots of dryandra out there, those long spear and those prickly trees. And it's beautiful and amazing. And Noble Falls is out there. So had like a little waterfall and creeks to swim around in and, catch yabbies and stuff like that. So I had a really, really wholesome, country sort of
childhood. Yeah.
But we're still close enough to the city that, we could come down. And I played a lot of hockey growing
up. Oh, really?
Yeah, I come from a big hockey family on my mum's side of the family. There's all Olympians and gold medals and all sorts of stuff. Like, they're crazy, successful, and a lot to live up to.
Oh, my God.
Actually.
You're like, I'm pressure.
So we came down to Perth to play hockey, three, four times a week. My mum just drove and drove and drove.
She'd racked up the kilometres on the car then.
Yeah, Winyana's old car too. Shame to get around in, but, we look back on it now and we thought that was pretty cool. Yeah. Really good childhood. Yep.
Oh my God.
And I'm related to everybody in Western Australia. So
like every Noongar talk is just related to everyone.
Related to everybody. So, you know, the dating pool is actually very shallow.
Oh,
stop.
It's awful.
You need to stray away from a lot of mob.
I used to work at an all girls school as the ALO, and I had to talk to this children and families class, but just Wadjalah girls. And I had to say, like, yeah, if you want to go, like, grabbing another black fella, like, you sometimes got to ask, like, your auntie or your nan or something. And they were, like, the blood drained from their face. Like, we got to tell, like, our family, like, who we're kissing around with. I was like, yeah, because that might be your cousin.
That might be your cousin.
They were shook. I was like, I know, it's a bit strange, but for us, it's safe. Better to be safe than sorry. What?
Better to be safe than sorry. Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Well, talking about your early life, I read that you were on one of the first cycles of Australia's Next Top Model, and I couldn't believe that. I was like, what the heck?
A lifetime ago, it feels.
Oh, God. Like, early 2000s, you were on.
You were probably not born.
2003.
Yeah, 2005 it was.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yeah, that was a crazy sort of experience, but it changed my life.
I can imagine.
It's probably the best thing that I ever did, as much as it was almost like a traumatic experience without it being like
outwardly traumatic.
Yeah like bad. it was amazing. It was literally like I grew up, like I said, in the country, tomboy, played hockey, played basketball, you know, like you wouldn't have got me into a dress until I was like 15 or something like
just
that.
Just out of curiosity, what made you like get into that? Was it just a...
You know what, like family mostly would say to me, like, because I was tall and skinny. Mm. Like I was probably as tall then as I am now. Like I was weird as a, you know, 13, 14 year old.
Okay.
Like, wow, you're really tall.
Mm.
And they were just always saying, you should model. And I was like, no, shame.
True.
Like, I'm not doing that, you know. But inside me, I loved fashion. Magazines were like a really big thing back then.
Yeah.
And like I would save my pocket money just to buy magazines.
What were the magazines like? Were they like Girlfriend?
Girlfriend and Dolly.
Yeah. I remember Dolly.
Yeah.
I remember Dolly. I used to beg my mum to
so
get me a Dolly.
Sad that they're not around now. So any magazine that I could possibly find and get my hands on, I might have the same magazine for, you know, a month, but I would read it.
You read all of it.
Over and over again and stare at pictures of models and of clothes and just hope that, like, you know, I could save enough, because I babysat a lot as a young person, like for the other families around town, and I would save my money just to put clothes on lay-by. Oh, you probably don't even know
what lay-by is.
So it's like...
I forgot about that.
It's like after lay-by, not
after.
It's
like lay-by counter. They don't even have a lay-by counter anymore.
Do they?
No, you can still lay-by at some places.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, being an adult now, I've been lay-bying my couch.
They used to have that at the Broom Target, little lay-by counter.
Big W. For me, it was the Australian Big W.
Oh, my God.
So, the interest, I guess, was always there. It was just that, like, my confidence didn't allow me to want to explore that a little bit more. And my idea of beauty back then, you know, in every magazine was the girl with blonde hair and blue eyes. Apparently Girl Next Door here in Australia was like the beach babe. And I didn't fit that category.
Yeah.
So it's not that my family and my parents didn't tell me that I was beautiful. Mm. Like I was always confident in my ability to do things, and like I knew I had talent in other areas, but like I didn't consider myself to be somebody that could walk down a runway or be in the magazine. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, I got to uni and I was watching America's Next Top Model and like got obsessed with it with my housemates.
Watching them get screamed at.
Tyra's a bit off chops. But she they would say to me, like I was at UWA at the time, and like my housemates and friends would be like, you should do this if it comes to Australia. And I was reading NW magazine one day and it had like
a flyer.
For it. So
that's crazy. You like most definitely, that's 2005. Mm. Like you have set yourself up to really be like a pioneer First Nations model, because nowadays we've got like Billie Jean, we have like Samantha Harris, all these people, but they're like just a bit older than us, you know? Like this is going all the way back to 2005. Where genuinely you wouldn't come across someone that looks like you in anything.
Yeah.
Where nowadays we've got a chance. We've got more of a fighting chance to
see
representation.
Social media as well. Like you can just be a model just based on your social media page.
But genuinely, that's different.
Yeah, you're the OG. Yeah.
True.
Oh, no, yeah, I don't know about that. But I do feel like in some ways I was able to be a face for other Indigenous girls like myself. And, you know, having that experience and doing that and doing so well on the show. And in actual fact, like, they shone me in a really great light as well, you know, like, you know, I was the funny, you know, little bush girl, you know, that has come in with no idea about fashion and, you know, was wearing heels for the first time and wearing makeup for the first time. And they're putting me in frilly dresses and I'm like, I would never pick this for myself. And, you know, but the girls around me were amazing. And actually, in actual fact, there was another Indigenous girl on the show.
Oh, that's great.
Naomi, she was the first person to get kicked off. She's from Queensland, so she was Naomi Thompson back then. And funnily enough, we've sort of gone full circle, and we've met each other in the industry again.
That's
and
lovely.
She's a designer for a swimwear label. So
that's amazing.
So mob are really making it in the fashion world
and
now,
have been.
You know, and you don't have to just be a model to like be a part of that industry. You can.
Yeah.
There's so many creative avenues
they
that you can go down.
You can be like a writer for Vogue. You can be like a
100
designer. You can do so many things in fashion, not just like modeling or like.
You can be in marketing.
You can be in marketing.
Like you can be a lawyer and be in fashion if you wanted to be. You know, like look at contracts and stuff like that. Like there's. Like it is an entire industry, and that's sort of my message now when I go out and talk to people, and young people in particular, about the industry. They think that they need to be a designer or a model or a photographer to be in the industry.
Yeah, because those are the kind of faces, but it's like there's a lot of helping hands in the back that make it tick like a well-oiled machine, and without them, like what is the industry if it's just models, designers and photographers? There's not...
Yeah.
It's not moving.
It's not moving.
Yeah. And so I got to get started in 2005, did the show, found an agent, worked as a model, but then slowly, like over the years, you know, my role in the industry has like really changed. I've worked in journalism, writing about fashion. I've worked as a creative director. I've spent some time behind the camera as well as in front of the camera. You know, I've been a stylist, you know, like and played around with, you know, styling other people. I'm great at styling other people. Crap at styling myself. Like I've got the mum look fully going now. I do it really well. You know, like I've been able to try bits and pieces and it's broadened my knowledge of the industry, and it's allowed me to sort of move and make space not only for myself but for other mob wanting to come into the industry as well. So
It seems ANTM was like your foot in the door.
It was 100% my foot in the door.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, and those that I've got to say, it was a really amazing experience in so many ways. I mean, they gave me, some of them gave me almost the wrong idea about the industry, was that like a model had to shut up, look good, you know, and smile when told. When in actual fact, it's really different now. Like back then, it might have been that way for a model, but a model is an entire brand now. You can have opinions. You can, you know, if you get yourself to a point where you're able to have choices on who are the clients that you're working with as well, you can really set out to send a message to people. And I think that's something like that Sam Harris does.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Really well. And look, she's had a much bigger career as a model than I did. I remember meeting Sam. She was like this shy little 13, 14-year-old came into the agency and they were like, oh, she needs somebody to talk to. Like, will you come in and meet her? And, you know, I went in and, like, tried to yarn to her. Nah, wouldn't say a word or anything.
God.
She's grown so much in the industry now, and now she's like an entire brand.
That's
you know?
True.
And she really speaks for mob now because she's just so looked up to. So and then my brother as well, like my brother's like
he is literally everywhere. I see him everywhere.
Yes,
genuinely.
Yeah,
like,
I'm actually sick of his face.
No. Yeah, we blessed in the west, no doubt. North to the south, all we're about
is keeping all the mob together. We stay on forever because we want it better. Say now. It's just so inspiring to see mob just like normalized in like H&M, for example.
True.
Just like posters of them or for Dior, for freaking everything.
Yeah.
It's like so good to see that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So he's like kind of normalizing it
yeah.
for mob, for everyone actually.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
just, he, it's awesome.
He is amazing. And I always say he lives the dream for both of us. You know, he got to places that like I wanted to get to and didn't get to because it wasn't my time in the industry then. But now he's working for like Ralph Lauren and Louis Vuitton and, you know, like the biggest names ever in fashion.
Yeah.
Literally like have him as an ambassador.
That's
like,
crazy.
He has done so well. And also as a, like a male model, like it's even harder, as a male model. Mm. And he's probably one of the most booked, not Indigenous models, but one of the most booked models
point
in Australia. And he got started long before being an Indigenous model was sort of like on trend.
Yeah. Or that they were kind of casting for that. It was just.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wonderful. And I just, I'm intrigued as to how, because obviously when a lot of people look back on early 2000s modelling shows or just modelling in general, only now have people kind of become conscious that some of the things were problematic or some of the thoughts like flying around about how models should be. Like you said, don't speak. A lot of them were just like coat hangers for the clothes, you know, they weren't really people.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how your relationship with modelling has changed. And now that you're in a position to cast models as well, your approach to that, which might differ to some of the, you know, castings that you attended as a model?
Yeah. Oh, look, castings back then as well. Look, we didn't have Instagram.
Yeah.
That's how ancient I am. Back then we had to go to castings all the time and you'd stand there for hours and wait your turn and, like, you get to walk once in front of a designer or a casting agent, you know, and then you'd go back and you might wait, like, a week or two before you hear anything. And there's lots of no's, of, you know, there's more no's than there ever are yeses to anything. So it can play with your confidence quite a lot. And I think that I did struggle with that. In hindsight, I don't think I realised it at the time because I was so young. But I look back on it now and I go, yeah, that actually played with me and the way I saw myself.
Yeah.
You know, now it's very, very different. What actually changed for me was in 2007, I think it was, I did Miss Universe.
Yeah.
And actually did like really well in the program to make like the national final. And I was so used to just being a model, like that just stood there and sort of like looked pretty and my walk was right. And, you know, like I looked every bit the part, but I didn't know how to show my personality. It was, and I didn't know, like, I didn't realise that I could have a say in that program.
Yeah.
So, and that was kind of like the turning point for me. And I realised that, you know, like I can make so much more out of this, not just for myself, but for other women that want to be a part of this. And that's where, like, I came up with Miss NAIDOC and, you know, started working with the Perth NAIDOC committee on that program and turning that more into a leadership and empowerment program, because Miss Universe, we sort of just got thrown in front of judges and you just had to figure it out on your own. And I didn't feel that that was a way to treat
people.
These young women coming in who are also still figuring out who
they
were at that point. I felt like there could have been some more coaching around that. So, and I didn't want another young black girl to walk into a program like that and feel that she was completely lost and coming out of it feeling like she'd failed because there wasn't enough support around her.
Or as if the only winner is the actual winner. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you come out of it, if you didn't win, you got nothing out of it. Those
Absolutely.
Kind of programs.
Yeah. So Miss NAIDOC sort of became like, look, really, I hate pageants. I think they're really outdated now. But it's a platform and an opportunity for like-minded Indigenous women to come together and talk about the things that are actually,
like, relevant, important, and
showcase
their personality and showcase who they are.
Yeah. And most of the women we have come through the program are women that in university have clear career paths. They know what they're passionate about.
Exactly.
Some of them are mums
even,
you know, like, and they might just be coming in because they want to or show their children like what it is to be empowered. And, you know, I say, you know, I've written the program, developed the program over time. I'm not there like teaching them or talking to them about my experiences.
Yeah.
It's just literally putting together a space where women are able to talk to each other about what's important to them at that time. And they drive that program. I don't drive that program. The participants drive that program every year, and the experience becomes what they want it to be. So, and yes, they get a photo shoot in all of it, and they get crowning night, and they get like fancy dinner and, you know, all that really fun stuff. But that's just an opportunity to have another space to work in together, and another space to keep pushing each other forward. And I think the greatest thing about that program, and probably the thing I'm most proud of with that program, is that our women keep coming back. So they come in as participants, they get through the program, they've created like this amazing network between each other and this sisterhood. And then the following years, they're coming back and they're going, I want to be a part of the working group.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I see them at crowning night. They're buying tickets to come and watch the next cohort of like women coming through. Like, it's the most amazing program.
You're the foot in the door now. Well, Miss NAIDOC's the foot, the other people's equivalent of their foot in the door, I think. Even if it's not that they want to go and be a model and now they've met a photographer and met you and all these people, they might just leave feeling empowered, and that's enough to take them to go and do things that they wouldn't have done previously, or apply for a job they thought they couldn't do, or whatever it is, you know?
100%. And it definitely inspires other black women as well, especially with the whole Miss NAIDOC initiative. I think looking at some of my friends who've also been part of it, it's just made me feel inspired as well.
True.
I'm like, damn, should I apply? Or like, you know.
You so should. 2025's your year, babe.
Sovereign takeover.
We'll see. We'll see. But like also just, it's inspiring others, and it's inspiring a whole community.
Yeah, true. Or even like imagine little girls being told like you could be Miss NAIDOC or something like that. Concept
so
is really lovely that's something they can actually strive for even as a kid. Whereas a lot of kids grew up not having something like that, you know? It was Miss Australia, whatever it is. And
we're
like,
lucky.
Well, what am I going to do with that, you know?
We are so lucky we've got Miss NAIDOC. It's like, that's a thing.
Yeah. But. Well, I have a daughter now, like she's 5, and she comes along to all the Miss NAIDOC.
That's gorgeous.
Stuff with me, and she loves it. And she, you know, she was backstage with me at crowning night, and she's going, Mum, look at her dress. She's so beautiful.
Don't even.
And, you know, like just to have like that around, like my daughter's actually so lucky because we didn't grow up with that.
True.
You know?
And kids are also very intuitive. So to see that, like her, she'll grow up with the perception that modelling and even just like these competitions and stuff is friendly and encouraging and empowering is really actually quite good.
It's good.
It's good she's seeing an environment where it's not about who wins or who gets this award. It's just supporting each other and rocking up and doing our best, you know?
Yes, 100%. It's all about team building. And look, Miss NAIDOC has become so well known. Like, we've been doing it for 14 years now in the community, that there was a real call out for a Mr. NAIDOC.
Yes,
so, I remember this.
Yes, so we started Mr. NAIDOC a couple of years ago. I think this year was our third year. And oh my goodness, do we have some like amazing young men.
Lovely things.
We have some lovely things in our community for sure. And that has been unreal. This year, there was a young man named Camus Brearley that won.
I know, I was so happy.
Yeah, and he won Mr. NAIDOC. And my daughter, she actually drew it for him like the whole time. She's like, Mom, Camus is so handsome.
I'm
like, little girl, behave yourself. This is a grown man you're talking about. But she just thought he was so deadly. Aww. And she just loved seeing him on the catwalk. And when he walked out, and she goes, Mom, he's so handsome. And then hid under the table because she was shame. But he, you know, he's like the perfect example. You know, he's this gorgeous, young, shy,
very young,
shy guy. You know, he's got this confidence about him without being like too arrogant or outward about it. You know?
Oh, like humble.
He's really humble and he's quietly spoken, really sweet. And you know, he was a perfect example of like what leadership can actually be. It's not always about being like the loudest person in the room. It's not always about having something to say. Camus led by his actions in that program. He showed up to everything. He was a part of everything. He contributed really well in all of the activities and in all of the programs like around Mr. NAIDOC as well. And you know, like that's what made him like Mr. NAIDOC in the end, was that he was just willing to not just be there, but to take the rest of the group along
on
the ride. with him and listened and learned from other people. And that's where we want Miss and Mr. NAIDOC to be. It's about listening and learning. It's about leadership without, you know, having it to be, you know, us at rallies and marches.
True.
And, you know, all and having bigger, louder, angrier voices all the time. Mm. It doesn't, that's important still, yeah. Yes, but leadership doesn't only
always have to be that.
Look no. like that.
And that's I always say that's a mob attribute we have. We're very humble. We grow up humble. We grow up from humble families. I know for a fact that, my childhood, I guess you could call it shame, but I would call it more humility. I was really influenced by the humble women and, the humble people in my life because, I don't know, I feel like that's such a mob attribute. We grow up humble. We are humble. And that's us demonstrating our leadership in some roles.
Downplay their achievements as well. You know, stop, leave it. And I'm like, you did this? What the hell? And I grow up and I'm like, oh my God, you did this, this, this and this. I never knew. And you don't walk around telling people. I would scream from the rooftops.
Yeah.
You know? But everyone's like, no, leave it. And they're very, I think people are adamant on just making it a life for themselves quietly. Yeah. I think a lot of mob live to enjoy their life. Yeah. They're not doing things to go be out and big famous, you know, strike gold or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's if I can provide for my family, inspire people in my community, have my family be proud of me, I've won. You know, that seems to be the recurring thing that I hear.
If you make your mum smile, you've made it.
I know. And you know what? And that's the same thing every year when we do Miss and Mr. NAIDOC, you know, who inspires you the most?
They say their mum.
They always their mum or their nan or their pop, you know, Stop. And it's just so typical of mob, you know,
to just shouting out their nan.
People in their lives are always those people that are they're closest to, you know. Back in my day, someone asked me who my idol was. I was Kathy Freeman, Nova Paris.
God.
I didn't think about mum.
True.
I didn't think about Nat. You know,
driving you to hockey too.
But now I look back and I'm like, gee, she did so much for us.
That's amazing.
It's amazing, I think, to have so many wonderful, amazing leaders in our community that really want something better for mob. You know, we've been through enough, and I think, and I'm hoping, I guess, that my generation was the last generation of to go through, you know, that shame and stay quiet sort of thing. But the next generation of young people, yourselves even, coming through is just unreal, and I can't imagine what the next generation after that is going to be. And I hope we'll probably have some of the same issues, but we're going to have a whole generation people that are going to be so much more empowered.
Yeah, we blessed in the west, no doubt. North to the south, all we're about is keeping all the mob together. We stay on forever because we want a better set now.
Let's talk about Kerrigan, because I'm really
Oh my God, Kerrigan's grown.
It's so big now.
True.
How does it, you're the CEO.
Yeah.
So
Kerrigan, I didn't start Kerrigan.
Yeah.
Kerrigan was started by Amanda Healy, who is who I want to be when I grow up.
Shame. Shame.
She is
so cute.
An amazing, amazing woman and genuinely cares about mob, genuinely cares about making a difference, wants to see our women in particular empowered in the business space as well. So look, she honestly, I call her Mum Manda because she's another mum. She's like an auntie, you know. And she I worked with her just as a model when Kerrigan started. So Kerrigan's about 10 years old now.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she wanted some models on her first runways and stuff like that. I came back from Sydney and did a show for her, and you know, the relationship sort of started there. And as the years have gone on, I've helped her with some shows and done some styling work and stuff like that. So it was sort of an arm's length relationship with Kerrigan at that point. In recent times, we started doing some cultural exchange programs internationally. So we're working with Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, and they were wanting to showcase Indigenous art, culture and fashion internationally, which is amazing and fantastic and such a full experience, I guess. And so we started doing some pilots around that. Kerrigan itself, as a brand, you know, has sort of been the driver. You know, Amanda saw the need for Indigenous representation on clothing. She saw it as a need not only for mob to be able to proudly wear, but also for like visitors to Australia to be able to take something away with them that is truly unique, authentically Indigenous, authentically Australian, other than a little plastic boomerang they buy at the airport on the way.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably made in China and, you know, or whatever. And of course, like the industry sort of like retail and that has sort of changed now in that, you know, there's a lot more artists out there and being represented and being able to put their products out on shelves. But I think Currican was definitely one of the pioneers.
And it stands out even with other art and things popping up in terms of quality. Like like I said, I've had my dress for years and it's not like you've just gone and printed. It's like, you know, when it gets plasticky, when people like iron art onto a shirt and it's like, yes, that's lovely, but this is like authentically good quality clothes from a part of like inception where you've got the actual art that you want to put all the way to the actual product that gets sold on the shelf. There's nothing that I could fault it. It's lovely product and it's impactful product.
Yeah.
So it's like,
and
why
not? And I think that that's been the aim of Currican as well in this, is that not only do we, are we getting to showcase the artists and their work and their stories, we do it on fabric that is like considered luxury. So we're using cashmeres and silks. And the whole idea around that was that we wanted to uplift and sort of like start putting our culture on on a pedestal.
Yeah.
We are, our culture is beautiful. We deserve world-class.
Period.
Yeah.
Luxury.
Period.
You know, treatment and representation, you know, like back in the day, you know, like an Aboriginal person was, you know, we all lived out in the desert and we had red dirt all over us and that was the idea of who we are. That is not
That's not true.
Are now. We...
We have so much. We are the oldest living culture in the world. Like we are called First Nations people for a reason, because we are the first.
Yeah.
We are the first of a country.
Yeah.
And there's so much more. Even on that note, there's so much to our artwork. There's so much to our culture.
That was the whole, that was the idea around Currican.
Yeah.
Not just to make T-shirts. Like,
no,
to those who do that, that is wonderful.
Good as well,
and still totally a part of the industry and important and, you know, like wear your culture on whatever
clothes
or accessories that you can, if that's what you feel works for you. At Currican, we just decided that we wanted to elevate that. We want to elevate culture. We want to elevate our stories. Yes, they're some of the oldest stories in the entire world, but they are still relevant, still important, and should be held to like really high esteem.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's wicked.
So, and that's been, look, Currican stands for so much. Yes, it's a clothing label. Yes, you know, like some of our pieces are expensive too. You know, you want a cashmere scarf, like you're going to have to fork out for it.
It's cashmere though.
But, you know, like we're so much deeper than that. Like we are a social enterprise first. So everything we make goes back to the artists that we're working with, because we're not about just building our business and making Currican world known. We are about economic empowerment.
Yeah.
This money going back to an artist, a woman, a single mum living in her community, raising her kids, you know, getting them to school every day, you know, having like, you know, that's her business is her art.
Exactly.
She's an entrepreneur. Like she is working hard to make money for her family.
And her art is her culture.
Her art is her culture and it's also her job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but us being able to give back to her empowers her, empowers her business,
empowers her
family, and then trickles all the way out into her community and other women, like we were talking, Miss Nadoc and networks and all of that, like get to see that. And,
for sure.
You know, get to, oh, well, she's doing really well in her little business. Like, I can paint too, or I can make this, or I can make, maybe I can turn that into a business, you know, like, and so I guess that's what we're doing at Currican, like in terms of the label, where like our drive is like is economic empowerment.
Absolutely.
You know, in communities. So we have a number of amazing artists on our list. And they come from all over Australia. So,
oh, amazing.
Yeah. So while most of them are probably West Australian, that's because like we're based here and we really love West Australian art as well.
We've got real.
A little Let's bit be of a for bias. Real.
Yeah, I think you guys definitely set the benchmark for best practice in a lot of regards, especially in like your remuneration of your artists, because it's so common where artists get ripped off, lied to, and that's literally the reason I'm doing intellectual property law.
Yeah.
So I think that's, like you said, you practice what you preach. You are a social enterprise before you are a fashion brand.
Yep.
And if anyone was to ever pull you up on that, you've got all these examples here that we all know living in Perth. Everybody knows someone who has been assisted by Kirakin in whatever way it is, or that knows of Kirakin or has been impressed by Kirakin. You know, you carry such a good, positive reputation around here. So
We do our best at Kirakin. And, you know, the fashion industry itself can be a really hard and really shallow kind of industry at times. But, you know, we work really hard at Kirakin to make sure that, you know,
no one has
that
experience.
What we do means a whole lot more than just, you know, putting clothes on a model or something.
I mean, you make it so custom as well, like Nerilda Jacobs.
I was going to say that. It was so
her daughter does help design that,
So that actually, I'm really like excited about that. And I'm so glad you brought it up, because that's the first CEO of like the Kirakin Foundation and the work that we do at Kirakin. I haven't been so involved in like the design process like over the last you know year that I've been there full time. But that dress for Nerilda, I got to creative direct.
Stunning.
Look, how hard is it to dress Nerilda Jacobs?
She looks good in anything.
In anything.
True. Bright colours as well. Yeah. And that's you guys' thing.
Yeah. Look, I knew my job was going to be really easy. I was like, she's like a perfect size 10 as well. Like, she's just got curves in all the right places. She's gorgeous. Like, that neckline, that shoulder line.
Oh, the collarbones.
The collarbone with that gorgeous, like her jawline and her
haircut. Yeah.
Like, she's just...
She's a queen.
Yeah. She is a queen. And she's got the personality behind her, which can make anything look great when they've got a personality like that. So humble, but, like, a bright, shining light also. Like, that's easy to dress. So we went with... Look, she consulted with me as well on, like, what exactly she wanted it to be, and we actually had a dress that we called the Nerilda dress at Kirakin.
Oh my god.
It was a one shoulder dress as well, and it was very blingy, very sparkly, and we put it on her, and it was made for her. So we actually copied the pattern but tweaked like a few things with that dress, changed the material, fixed some bits and pieces up there just so it fitted like a little bit nicer for her. I flew over to Sydney, did a fitting with her, and, you know, had a yarn and, you know, everything at the same time, which was lovely, like catching up with her. And then, you know, we're like, we need artwork. And it just made sense. To get her daughter.
Jade.
Yeah, Jade, to do the artwork for her. And Jade, look, she's an artist that I'm always watching anyway. Same. Because I think she is fantastic.
We went to school.
Full circle as well, that their mob are from here too, that you get to fly to Sydney.
To Sydney.
And it's, you know, like a Perth collaboration.
With a West Australian brand.
Yeah, yeah. And Nerilda is full, like she... If she can wear anything made by Mob, she will wear it, and she will wear it well.
True.
But the fact that like we're a West Australian brand as well, it's even more
heightens your appeal.
It's not just about Indigenous fashion; it's West Australian fashion that she wants to be a part of as well. The artwork turned out beautifully.
Yeah.
I was so happy. The story behind it was amazing as well, and really spoke to Nerilda and where she's from, and who can do that better than like her own daughter. It's great for us at Kirakin to be able to like play artistically as well, you know. So like, yes, like we manufacture a clothing that people can wear every single day, but to be able to play with bespoke pieces and play with pieces that, you know, or creative pieces that we can put down a runway is amazing as well. And you have to do that as a fashion brand as well. You have to show people like your creativity and the fact that you can look outside the box and, you know, and sort of build some appeal about you.
And conversation,
you know,
as well.
And conversation. So to be able to do stuff like, and to be a part of that, and for Amanda to also trust me with that was insane. And I actually really feel like really empowered about
Aww,
like
that's
working
lovely.
more closely, like in design and consultation.
There you go.
Going forward. So she's just like added something to, like, I've just added something
to your
new to
repertoire.
My resume.
Yeah. And you guys consistently have successful fashion weeks. Like,
yes.
Like in the creative aspect where you have your everyday pieces that you sell and like your Rain Square pop up and all your pop ups around Perth. Yeah. Where you really push the bounds on in Fashion Week. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so gorgeous. Yeah. I wear that to the shops. Like,
yeah. So this year we had, we were at Melbourne Fashion Festival. That was our first like big one for this year. And we were part of the Mob in Fashion show. And Mob in Fashion is actually my brother Nathan's little organisation. And they work, they're the behind the scenes crew. They put full productions together and everything. And they're really like probably the experts in like Indigenous fashion at the moment. And so they did a whole showcase like of Indigenous brands, and Kirikan was one of those. And that collection this year was, the artwork was done by Buffy Punch, who's a really well-known artist here. She's known mostly for her earrings.
Yeah. So many of hers.
Her earrings are amazing. Buffy is a great supporter of Kirikan and has worked alongside us and also helped us with our cultural exchange programs internationally. So she did the artwork for that, and it was all about Noongar country, which was fantastic, you know, like just to have that representation. You know, often we're using artists that are in regional and remote communities. Yeah. So to have someone that was like really from home was fantastic. And she used like greens and pinks and purples and really beautiful feminine sort of girly sort of colors, and to see what Mob in Fashion did that with that in the way of styling were like took it to like a whole Next new level. Level and that that collaboration as well was not only like with Buffy as the artist but also Kira Gentle, who is a Perth-based designer here. She's just come, like she's just graduated recently, and she has her style and her range is really quite the opposite of Kirikan. Kirikan's always been like really resort, really flowing, really simple pieces that, you know, that just sort of like work well on everybody. Kira, her style is very almost like asymmetrical, very structured. I think architecture plays a really big part in like her inspo. So to fuse that with Amanda's idea of Kirikan, which is really free flowing. They came out with some amazing pieces in terms of blazers and dresses and skirts and corsets and, you know, things that I guess that I didn't imagine for Kirikan in the first place, but God, they surprised me like when I saw it. And those, I'm there trying to squeeze myself into the corsets. And,
Let me have a go.
All these sample size dresses just to try them all on. And that collection, that collection did really, really well, and that's actually gone into production now. There's some select pieces.
Oh my God.
That collection. So you'll see a whole new range of Kirikan.
I'm so excited.
So I think we've touched on Kirikan. I know you want to talk about the Kirikan Foundation as well.
Yeah.
Because you guys are a social enterprise and all the works that you do. So yeah, this is also a platform for people to be introduced to Kirikan Foundation and how it ties into the brand.
Yeah, so as I said before, Kirikan's about 10 years old. Worked really hard to, you know, make sure that we're giving back to our artists correctly, that we're looking after them, that there is an understanding of how the partnership works between the artist and Kirikan as a brand. I guess what we've seen over the last few years is that while Indigenous fashion has become something that the Australian fashion industry has, you know, like invested in now, it's been a trend. Look, it's really normal. That's how the fashion industry works. It's really transient.
Yes.
Some years you're in, some years you're out. It depends on whether or not what you're doing is on trend at that time.
Or relevant.
Are you lucky enough to be on trend while you're there? And it works for every single creative within that industry. So the last couple of years has been really exciting because Indigenous fashion has been on the forefront, and we're seeing all these labels emerge, you know, and Kirikan's been around for 10 years. We've been doing this for a long time now. We're very, very mature as a business. So to see others coming into the industry was really exciting for us, but we've seen some gaps, so that while there is a platform there through the Australian fashion industry, a lot of the labels and a lot of our creatives are popping up now and starting businesses, but not actually understanding how to take the next steps. So it's wonderful, you know, we're seeing them on runways You can put a collection together, put it on a runway. It goes into a magazine or a newspaper or whatever, and it gets spoken about. But it's kind of stopping there. Those businesses, we want to see them go into production. We want to see them manufacturing, and we want to see them selling. And that's how we see, you know, going back to Kirikan's original ethos around economic empowerment, we want to see these businesses doing really well. If they do really well, it's actually really good for Kirikan as well. It creates competition. It create, you know, it creates a circle around us.
It's like a sub-industry.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of like where it was like you and a couple others were the standouts in the Australian industry. We're almost making our own kind of like section. Our own division of the fashion industry. That's boss.
So Kirikan, while we've identified some of the gaps there, we're working to develop programs that are going to help us to support businesses like those. And not just designers like with labels, but also like other creatives like photographers wanting to build their business and go into the industry. You know, say a model who needs to work on her portfolio and needs to build her brand, and what does that actually look like, and what are some strategies around that? We want to be able to help them with networking and the possibility of, we don't belong just here in Australia. We're from Australia. But we want to tell our stories to the world. Exactly. So making international connections is really important. We've had that last year. We took 5 labels with us to London to put on a huge showcase in Australia House. Australia House is amazing. If you go to London, have you been?
No, but I've heard about it.
If you go to London, check out Australia House.
I'm adding it.
They're actually, the building is so amazing that they used like one of the main ballrooms as the bank in the Harry Potter movies.
No.
Oh my gosh. No.
Yeah, so if you look at, like, if you watch the Harry Potter movies, there's like these black and white.
The black and white. Yes.
In the bank. That's Australia House.
No, it's not. Really?
It's Australia House.
Wow. You're kidding me right
no
now.
No lie.
You're kidding.
Wouldn't lie to you, sis.
I'm going to go. I'm putting that on the bucket list.
Yeah. It was incredible. We had so much media. Vogue came, you know, like Harper's, you know, like we had.
That's incredible.
Like all the Australian media, like were there, you know, because obviously they've got, you know.
Mary Claire and all that.
Everyone over there. So it was all over the news and all like, you know, written in magazines and newspapers and everything.
That's awesome.
Saw pictures of myself like up in like the Qantas lounge and everything. Oh, like Qantas got behind us. And, you know, that was an amazing experience, like just in the show.
That's
like
definitely
just
a milestone.
To be able to do that. That's and we got to take Indigenous creatives over for that. So that was not only models. We took photographer, videographer, designers. Journalists. There's actually a young girl working for NITV that's living over there at the moment.
Wow.
Like she's mob, you know, she's like having a crack in the UK, and she came and like covered our story, which was so exciting. And yeah, like our entire team was made of mob. Like it was all mob, and we were there showcasing exactly what we can do on an international stage.
Damn.
So while, and that was like an amazing experience, whirlwind experience and once in a lifetime sort of thing. It was during London Fashion Week as well. So, you know, like we're off
nice
the back
iconic
of that. But then to sit and have conversations and meetings with trade commissioners and to talk about the market and what that might look like for us was absolutely amazing. And I would say that half the brands that were there, like, went, you know what, like the UK is a viable market for us, like let's go into it. The other half went, I don't think we'll work here. And to us, that was a win on both sides, because it's a learning experience as well. Like you're learning and you know your business better than anybody else.
Exactly.
And to understand what your market is, it's actually really important and like something to really understand and know about.
Like, for sure, because you don't want also people to jump at the first opportunity they get and force it to work if it's just not working. And then waste time and resources and even shift the direction of their brand to fit the opportunity. So I think it's good that you also don't put pressure on people to like say yes to your opportunities.
Yeah,
to like,
oh,
they help me, like I need to make it work if it just doesn't fit. But I really like that through the Kirikan Foundation you also offer guidance, because I think so often in this country, whatever initiative it is, even outside of fashion, it's just people throwing money and hoping that those people will know how to magically manage the money and make it work. But I think the partnership guidance element of it literally sets people up for success.
And especially for mob, we get exploited.
Yeah, very true.
We get so exploited. To have that guidance is like pretty revolutionary.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to set people up for failure.
No.
You know, like that's the worst. That's actually more detrimental to our community.
Yeah.
So yeah, look, we're doing our best there with that. That's the Travelling Runways program. But that also, like, while I talk about like the really big shows, like a London show, we also do like sort of an offset of Travelling Runways where we're going into communities. So recently we were in Port Hedland, we went out to Pardoo. We worked with a local artist out there to put her artwork onto fabrics and make her own collection.
Oh, that's lovely.
So Pardoo Station hosted us out there.
They're amazing
and they want to do more within their community, and you know, and we got a whole bunch of local girls, and guys as models. They came out, we put them on a bus and brought them out
that's
to Pardoo
so
Station.
Sweet.
got their hair and makeup done, you know, like put them, gave them a little bit of runway training and like put them out onto the runway. And so not only did we get to showcase the artwork, we got to showcase Kirikan and the work that we do and to talk about how we're trying to give back to communities. But we gave local kids like an opportunity to be a part of something that's really special. One of our models was as young as, like, I think she was 6.
Oh my God. No. Oh,
and she had more confidence than any other person there, you know.
That's lovely. Like,
you're building core memories for them.
Yeah.
That's so special.
And this isn't just opportunities. We're paying these kids to come in as professionals and be a model. So that was the first thing that, like, I spoke to them about when we went into our workshop. So we are paying you for a service right now.
Yeah.
You are a paid model. That makes you a real model.
Yeah.
You are not just a community
girl. You're
not
doing us a favour.
Yeah. Jumping in and, you know, just having like a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
You are a professional from the minute,
that's lovely.
From the minute you start working for us. And those girls took that on board. They came into hair and makeup. They were on time. They were ready. They were pumped, you know, like they did everything that was asked of them and they earned their money at the end of the day. And we just feel that that is really important, especially for young people to understand like what your time and what your presence is actually worth.
Exactly.
As well. So we like to say, we like to see that we try and work from both ends with that program. We want to do the local stuff. We want to be around community. We want to work to empowering communities and having programs and events within those communities that are run by them and something that they can be proud of, like in showcasing their work. But also, you know, we're going right to the other end as well, where we're talking about, you know, moving into international markets and stuff like that and building those businesses. So that's kind of that focus with the foundation. Look, we're doing some other work as well, like in terms of empowerment and leadership and that grassroots. Obviously, that's what I've been doing for a number of years now. So we're gonna continue that work with some smaller programs, mostly grassroots. I feel like at the moment there's a lot of money going towards programs that are helping entrepreneurs and like in building startups and trying to scale up businesses, but we've left a gap in between there where we're taking everyday community people and trying to empower them to get to that point. So we're working, Kirikan's sort of working in that space as well, like developing programs there. We're talking to mostly women in particular, like because, you know, I'm a woman running these programs. I can't go out and for it to be culturally sort of appropriate for me to tell like a bunch of men, like, you know, how to become empowered. They don't listen to me anyway. But to work with, you know, a group of women who know they have talent, know they have something really special, are not really sure what to do with it, but empower them to understand what it would actually look like to run a business, what are some of the steps that they can put in place now to understand their finances, to understand what it might be like to raise capital in order to, you know, get their business going as well. All of those things, you know, like and all of those conversations around what it is to like help somebody get started.
Yeah.
Those are the programs that we're looking at as
God.
Well. So we're trying to fill the gap every sort of step of the way. And look, to be honest, like to work with someone like Amanda, who is an amazing businesswoman, you know, she has her engineering business as well that has done really, really well. Who understands business, who understands what it is to be a woman in a male-dominated industry as well. Like, she has really, like, you know, smashed down some walls along
for
the way.
Sure.
So she's the perfect person for women in our community to, like, have a yarn to and that. And then I'm sort of the one that sort of, you know, does all the work around the edges to you know, make sure that those programs
make it
all
happen,
run
yeah.
really, really well. Yeah, look, I'm really excited by this foundation. It's really young still. It's only about a year old, so we've got a lot of work to do. But I feel that, you know, we're getting some real support behind us now. And
traction.
I think, we've run a few pilots, so we're able to understand where we've gone right and where we've gone wrong, and, you know, to adjust our programs accordingly. And look, every community is different, so
True.
It's really important for us as well to remain flexible in what we're doing as well, because we can't say that, you know, what's relevant for
it's not a blanket
here
solution.
In Perth is relevant for those in the Kimberley or in the Pilbara or whatever. So, you know, I've worked in the not-for-profit space for a really long time as well. So I've talked about fashion and Kirikan, and that's been about 20 years, but I probably spent about 15 years in the not-for-profit space as well, building, writing and developing programs specifically for young girls and women. So now I guess...
Marry them, I guess,
I've married the two of them. Those two worlds have collided, and now I've got the opportunity to try and make a difference...
You most definitely are.
Through this space.
Wow.
Yeah, your boy, he had to put the city on the map. Boorloo, my sister, girl, you know exactly where it's at.
That was a big chart.
I know, I talk a lot, don't
I? No.
It's just like, so, it's, yeah, I'm awestruck. To be honest, like, stuff like this is definitely so fulfilling. And I only wish for it to flourish further. Because it's definitely... inspiring so many of us.
One of a kind.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Like, with sisters around, you know, like, and then, like, encouraging each other and helping each other out, you know, like, we'll all make it to
True.
Some degree, you know? So it's great having, you know, mob support us at Kirikan and, you know, support what we're doing as well. You know, it makes the job better.
Oh, 100%. Should we jump into Sovereign Tea?
Yes, we should.
So, you guys know... every week we do Sovereign Tea, so thoughts, energy, and affirmation. We jump scared you with Sovereign Tea when you rocked up.
Yeah. I promise it's not as deep as it sounds.
It's not.
It's literally the last part of our show where we just think it's important to do mental health check-ins, because, like, it is kind of overwhelming to get through the week without knowing what the heck you're doing. Like, that's just me personally. So, Jay and I do, we spend the last bit of our episode, 5 minutes or so, just saying, like, yeah, like, what is your tea, your thoughts, energy, and affirmation for the week ahead? What do you hope to achieve? Kind of like a mental health check-in, you know what I mean? So, we'll give you an example, because I know how daunting this sounds, I could imagine.
Thank you.
RJ, do you want to go first with your tea for the week ahead? Did you even think about it?
No.
Usually I'm not
prepared. I thought I'd just put it on you, so I didn't have to do it.
Nah, I'm not doing unless you do now.
Go on. My thoughts this week, I'm leaving for Broome, guys, for my trimester holiday. I'm very excited. So I'm going to come back my actual colour, nice and dark. But that means I've got to like lock in and get in preparation mode because I forgot how much work goes into like when you go away.
Are you a last minute packer or do you pre-plan?
No, last minute.
Same.
Pack, clean up my house, get the house sitter, all that stuff done. Just type all the loose ends, you know? You don't want to go away thinking about all the things that you left unfinished.
You're on holiday, so mate. You need to relax.
That's what I've got on for the next week. So therefore my energy is in organization and just like pushing through. Like I am actually on the home stretch now. I told myself like a month ago I was on the home stretch, but I wasn't really. I was just trying to get through it. But like I'm literally on the home stretch now. I just have one more assignment and then I can breathe. So that's where my energy is. And my affirmation is going to be, this is where we get stumped every week.
I don't know mine either.
I don't know, but the thing I'll tell remind myself throughout the week is definitely, I'm just going to say think of home. Think of home, because if the weather won't get me up out of bed, thinking about being home and not having anything to worry about will get me up. Yep. So that's my thing for the week.
Yay, yep. Amazing.
Good yeah. one. Go, Sharp.
My turn?
Yeah,
oh,
go,
damn.
Speed round.
Ooh. Well, Friday I'm graduating.
Woo!
Ooh. I'm finally done, guys. No, I've been done for ages, but my graduation date was always going to be the middle of the year. So, yeah, I'm graduating. I haven't thought of a dress or anything, so I need to probably get that sorted.
Kirikan?
Probably. Probably. plug. And then, yeah, so that's, I feel like I'm not thinking about the week ahead because, like, my Friday.
Just enjoy the joy of that.
Yeah, I need to live in the moment. I know I'm done.
You made it.
It's kind of inspiring because I'm, like, the first to graduate in my family. So kind of breaking that barrier and that generational, I'd say, curse, not cycle, that curse, because we didn't have that opportunity. Well, the people before me didn't. So, yeah, that's kind of like on my shoulders at the moment and on my mind especially. My energy is going into kind of not being lazy. I think I've been really lazy. I kind of want to get things done and not have to keep it at the back of my mind. I kind of need to get up and do things properly. I think I'm doing things so half-heartedly that I'm not actually putting energy into it. So I think I need to pick up the pace. My affirmation is, I always get stuck, eh?
I did it.
That's all that matters. Yeah, yep. I did it. And I'm going to leave it at that. I did it full stop.
Oh my God, love.
You deserve to be lazy and have a little bit of a break.
I do. But it's not looking good. otherwise, it's not looking good. People are like, are you yourself? I'm like, nah, just cruising.
yeah.
But yeah, no, you're right. I deserve that little sleeping.
You do. Yeah,
I do deserve that little sleeping.
Okay, what's yours?
Okay, well, I guess we're talking about our weeks. So I'm just coming off school holidays.
True.
I have four kids.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
You're so busy.
Yeah. Four kids, jobs, you know, life. I'm tired all the time.
No.
All the time.
Don't.
This is really my first full week
back
at work, no school holidays, like I don't have any, like I've been travelling as well in that time. So really this week is just about putting my head down, like, and getting, you know, and tying together all those little bits and pieces that you miss out on when you're, you know, travelling around and away and stuff like that. So I guess my affirmation would be like focus.
Yeah.
You know, beautiful. Like, and I was actually telling myself that on Sunday, I was like, you need to focus this week, Shannon. Stop getting distracted. You know,
lock the doors. Like, head down.
Head down, you know, like, stop, like, running around like a mad woman. Stay still and do, like that little bit of life admin, that little bit of work admin, all of those things that you need to, like, tie up. Like, let's get that done. This
oh my
week.
Gosh.
So focus.
Focus.
We love all very
that.
Different sovereignties. Yep. I love that.
I love it too. Oh my goodness.
Thank you so much, Shannon, for joining us on this episode.
You.
This
it's
is a standout.
A privilege.
Episode.
Made it so easy.
Oh my God.
Your first podcast, you did it.
Yeah, I did it.
It's an honor to be the first. Well, I guess one of the first now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to want me everywhere. I'm going to be so busy.
We did it first. But yes, thank you for coming on. Shar and I will see you guys next fortnight. Bye.
Bye, everyone. That's why we. That's why
You've been listening to Sovereign, a new RTRFM podcast by Sister Girls for Sister Girls, as well as any other mob and beautiful people that may relate.
I'm Charlene.
And I'm IJ.
And Sovereign would not be possible without the help and support of our team.
Big love to photographer Cole Baxter for our beautiful cover photo.
Music is Summertime Flow by Noongar Whangai rapper Joshua Eggington and Tani Walker. Sovereign is produced by Charlene Baloch and IJ McKenna.
Our artwork is by my sis Lavinia Nedolia McKenna.
Our executive producer is Daniel Raphael.
This podcast was created and recorded at RTRFM on Wajak Noongar Boodja. We pay our respects to elders past and present. This land was never ceded.